Blog Talk Radio.
Interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Welcome, friends, brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ, and seekers of the truth. But whoever you are, I know that we all share one thing in common. Don't we all want to know the truth about what's really going on here in this crazy world? So welcome to the 523rd edition of SDG, Sola Dea Gloria. And this is Crisis Update number 36. Now later in this message, after we've covered the truth that the fake news will never tell you and looked into the forbidden news that you'll never see on the network news, we'll tie it all into the highs and lows of this guy from the Bible named Joe. Now, the Bible says in Romans 8:28 that we know that all things work together for good to them that love God and to them who are called according to his purpose. So God showed Joseph that he's always there with his steadfast love that you could call mercy, showing him his favor regardless of the circumstances. So I hope you stay tuned to learn that regardless of what you're going through, we can always have the presence of God and live in the love and favor of him. Whether we're prisoner or free, sick or healthy, young or old, the bottom line, folks, is that as believers, we may be in this world, but we're not of this world. And as God's people, what are we doing? We're just passing through. So let's all refuse to be destroyed by this all-out Luciferian war on humanity. And stay tuned to find out the latest news that the mainstream media will never tell you as we dive deeper and deeper into America's new 9/11 events, which are unfolding in slow motion while on steroids. But remember, folks, it all started with this lab-engineered, media-manipulated coronavirus heist. Now, as always, folks, we're going to get into the news update, but first, let's review something from last week's episode. Now, last week, we covered the geographical upheaval that's going on in La Palma right now in the Canary Islands. And this is a live event unfolding as we speak with the possibility of a catastrophic consequence. Yet you know how the fake news in Orlando covered it? Well, WFTV TV weatherman, and his name is, and I'm calling you out, Brian Shields, he took a graphic that was prepared by Hal Turner, who's reporting on the tsunami, or the, I should say, the possibility of a tsunami from the La Palma Island eruption in the Canary Islands. And he basically called it, and I want to quote this here, not real, saying this type of deception is used by trolls. Then he flatly told his viewers that the tsunami danger was not real. Now, the History Channel says otherwise, but for the sake of time, I won't play that clip. And oh, by the way, folks, I literally heard Brian Shields say that. And I wanted to play that clip today. And Google took it down. Isn't that something, folks? Now, besides the History Channel, and everyone knows that you're not supposed to take the History Channel seriously because they host Ancient Aliens and they have the Curse of Oak Island, don't they? So they wouldn't ever slip anything out there that's informative, would they? But don't forget that last week I played a clip from Ty Green, who played the mega tsunami documentary from the BBC. And then how about a third witness? I have this clip. It's about a four-minute clip. It's from a group called Naked Science, and it's titled Mega Tsunami Scenario for La Palma Landslide. It's a four-minute, 48-second clip, and they get into the science behind this potential catastrophic event. So let's just hear what this third witness has to say about the potential for a La Palma landslide, which could lead to a tsunami.
A slide from this mountain could kill millions of people in Europe and along America's eastern seaboard. Some eminent scientists warn that it's purely a matter of time till it happens. This is the volcanic island of La Palma, 700 miles off the northwest coast of Africa. It's a newborn baby island, barely past its 4 millionth birthday, created in the last stage of what geologists call the rock cycle. Volcanoes can form land in various ways. In Hawaii, lava gently pours from vents in the ground to build up almost horizontal layers of new rock. But elsewhere, as here on La Palma, more violent eruptions build steep-sided cones with surrounding layers of thick ash. Eruptions in the past 60 years have jolted this island to the core, creating a fault line, a crack you can walk through, along the island's central spine, 6,000 feet above the Atlantic Ocean. On the western side of the fault, the land fell 13 feet down, then stopped. Geologist Bill McGuire and other scientists say gas pressures could build up in a future eruption and crack open the island along this fault line. They have traced the fault for at least 9 miles along the island ridge. And they believe the fault is so long that when it cracks open, 500 billion tons of rock will slide thousands of feet down into the ocean.
So it's going to go during a future eruption, there's no doubt about that. The problem is eruptions occur sometimes every 20 years, sometimes every 200 years.
McGuire paints a terrifying fantasy picture of what anyone standing on the top of the landslide would see and hear.
I don't know if anybody's heard the noise made by this amount of rock sliding against another great chunk of rock, but I always imagine it as if there are a million fingers scraping down a blackboard.
The slide will reach a speed of more than 220 miles per hour.
So you'd be hurtling down the slope of the volcano. It would start to break up into smaller pieces as it entered the ocean, but by then it would already have displaced something like half a mile of water, which would be towering above your head, and that would be probably the last thing you'd ever see. Spectacular way to die.
McGuire believes the impact with the ocean will create a dome of water nearly 3,000 feet high.
This is a mass of rock which is probably bigger than Manhattan Island. And when it collapses, it will generate ocean-wide tsunami, which will be at least as devastating as those that struck the Indian Ocean.
The vast amount of energy pumped into the ocean will create what one scientist has called a mega tsunami. Tsunami waves racing out in all directions. Computer predictions suggest they could even travel 4,000 miles toward the eastern seaboard of the United States, losing some, but not all of their power along the way.
But that wave will travel all the way across the Atlantic Ocean to the east coast of North America. But the water itself won't move all the way across. The individual particles in the water will transmit the energy to one another. And we can demonstrate that quite nicely on a pool table here, where the energy from this first ball I'm going to hit is transmitted through all the others to the last one.
Just as energy moves from ball to ball, so the landslide energy transfers from water particle to water particle across the ocean. As the landslide's energy approaches the coast, it builds up into a massive wall of water. These deep reds and blues are computer predictions of waves 100 feet high and more.
The level of destruction is difficult to quantify. It is going to be enormous, there's no doubt about that. If people are still in the cities when the collapse occurs, you may be considering millions of casualties.
So there you have it. Dr. McGuire talks about this fault line that's on the island right now from the past eruption. It's 9 miles long, and the side closest to the west face of the island, which is out to the ocean. It slipped 13 feet. Now, there's an estimated 500 billion tons of rock that could slide into the ocean. That would cause a half a mile of water being displaced with this water dome that's going to slosh literally 1,000 feet. And that's going to transmit out there through wave theory, okay? So what's the Bible say about two or three witnesses? And then does the Bible have anything to say about La Palma? Well, perhaps. Sister Kathy sent me this last Saturday. It's out on revelationchapter2.com. I thought I was going to sneeze. Anyways, back to the article. So the question is La Palma, which is Palm Island, going to play a factor in the tribulation? Well, if so, how does this relate to our departure, you know, also known as, quote-unquote, the rapture? So here is what this person posted. They posted an image of a volcano that looks like a big island on fire. And then they have Revelation chapter 8, verse 8. And listen to this. And the second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and the third part of the sea became blood. Now, as of yesterday, folks, small landslides are being reported, and cracks are opening in roads along this fault line. And these are all bad signs. Now, the fact that they're happening on the coastline where there's no lava flow is even a worse sign, because it's showing how unstable this western flank of the island, which these documentaries have been discussing, actually are. Now, the last that the lava eruption had happened around mid-altitude. Now, remember, this is a 6,000-foot island. It's a 6,000-foot-tall flank. So the lava has been coming out around 3,000 feet, and these landslides are happening all the way down to the water's edge. Now, any logical person is going to look at this and say, that's an unstable geological structure. But no, not Brian Shields from ABC Orlando. No, go back to sleep. If this flank slides into the sea, it will generate a tsunami. The only question is, how big? Then about 7 hours later, whatever the magnitude of that perturbation is, it will hit the East Coast. So the thing that is under discussion now is not if there will be a tsunami should a landslide occur, but how big will it be. But Brian Shields tells you this isn't even a possibility. All he talked about was a volcanic eruption. He didn't talk about the potential for this landslide. So he was acting like the earthquakes associated with the volcano is what could cause the tsunami. And sure, earthquakes do, but they have to be a fault line slip. Well, the ultimate fault line slip is a landslide. So if the landslide, the tsunami will occur. The only question is how big. And that's what you have to keep in mind. So what I'm advising the listeners to do is to just pay attention to this. Don't panic. Don't live in fear. Don't be a slave to fear. But be aware. Be prepared. So don't wait until the authorities tell you, because as soon as you hear this from the authorities, from Brian Shields on ABC, it'll be too late. Once the authorities start telling you to relocate, the panic will set in. The roads will clog when you go to try to fuel up. The gas stations will be closed. You know, now's the time to prepare. Don't do what the dumbed-down sheeple will do when the weatherman from ABC Orlando says, hey, this could be a problem. No, do it now. Don't wait in the long lines to get your gas. Don't rush around looking for food. Don't run around trying to pack when the roads are filling up and it's making you impossible to get out. Prepare now. And, folks, I'm telling you, this is all about money. Remember what we talked about last week? Money is the root of all evil. So what I'd like to do now before we get into the news is play Stephen Jacobson's Wake Up America, Part 4. So I just picked up on this, and he's telling us more truth concerning paper money and the lies of paper money. This is a 5 minute and 44 second clip.
There are only two economic systems. One is barter. The other is credit. Barter is simply the exchange of one thing of value for something else of value. A monetary system using gold and silver coin is a barter system. Throughout history, many different things have served as a medium of exchange because money in and of itself does not exist. Something must be used as money. People have traded for goods and services using cows, salt, tea, opium, and tobacco. Gold and silver have been accepted as money worldwide since ancient times. All things used as money have had a common characteristic. They were all tangible wealth. They were all things you could touch. They were all things you could weigh and measure. Credit, on the other hand, is intangible. You cannot touch it, you cannot weigh and measure it, because there is no substance to weigh and measure. It is all imagination. An honest money system uses wealth as a medium of exchange. Wealth is physical, not psychological. People produce wealth through their labor, transforming natural resources into usable products that have exchange value in the marketplace. Gold and silver converted to coin by human labor is wealth. Credit is not wealth. No labor is expended in the creation of credit other than a magician's sleight of hand. Centuries ago, when the goldsmith issued his first receipt for gold that did not exist, he created credit. He also created inflation, because credit and inflation are the same thing. They are both receipts for wealth that does not exist. They are both an imaginary medium of exchange. Remember, paper currency, a money substitute, is honest only when the real money for which it is a substitute equals the number of receipts in circulation. When half of the receipts circulating as a money substitute are redeemable in gold, the other half is both credit and inflation. When none of the receipts are redeemable, all of it is credit and inflation. Credit, bank credit, is inflation. Anything used as a medium of exchange in place of wealth is inflation. When using gold and silver coin as money, there can be no inflation. Therefore, the only cure for inflation is honest money. An honest and sound money system employs just weights and measures. A $10 gold coin is twice as large and twice as heavy as a $5 gold coin. Remember, a dollar is a unit of measurement for gold and silver coin to ensure uniformity of weight, purity, and value. A dollar unit of paper money that is not 100% redeemable in gold or silver coin is a dollar unit of inflation, which is a dollar unit of credit, which is a dollar unit of nothing. The sole function of paper money that is not 100% redeemable in gold or silver coin is to get things without paying for them. Those who issue and control paper money as credit get everything for nothing. Paper money as credit is a device to confiscate wealth using magic with numbers, where numbers of nothing are exchanged for things of substance and value. It was Daniel Webster who said,
"Of all the contrivances devised for cheating the laboring classes of mankind, none has been more effective than that which deludes him with paper money."
Folks, paper money is a fraud. The only way paper money has any value is if it's like our old silver certificates, and I'm looking at one in my hand right now. So on the silver certificate, it says United States of America, $1 in silver, redeemable to the bearer of this demand. Now I have on the other side of the little thing a Federal Reserve note, and a note is a promise to pay. Well, promise to pay what? Remember, a dollar is a unit of measure, just like a pound or a gram or a gallon or a liter. It's a unit of measure. So a measure of what? Of a certain specific amount of gold or silver, defined by U.S. federal code. So everybody's probably heard what's going on in Washington this week in the swamp. You know, Biden has this $3.5 trillion tax and spend extravaganza. And this is what happens at the end of every paper money cycle. They have to start printing more and more dollars. First, it was $1 trillion for the entire year. Actually, it was $1 trillion for the national deficit. Then it became spending of $1 trillion a year. And then $1 trillion a month. And now soon, and mark my words, folks, we're going to be hearing about $1 trillion being spent every single week. And then it's going to be every day. And that's when you get into the hockey stick portion of the geometric progression. Folks, if you have paper money, I recommend that you convert it to some sort of tangible asset. Gold, silver, beans, bullets, whatever, folks. Hold a little bit in reserve to pay your bills, but then make certain you have it converted to something of value, okay? So, this week, Pelosi claimed that everything shakes out on this $3.5 trillion spending bill. And remember what $1 trillion is, folks, in seconds. If you think about money in terms of seconds, and a dollar represents 1 second, $1 million would be about 11 days, $1 billion about 30 years, and $1 trillion would be 30,000 years worth of seconds. It's a lot of money. But listen to what Pelosi said. She tells the people at this presser that $3.5 trillion is zero.
It's not about a dollar amount. The dollar amount, as the president said, is zero. This bill will be paid for. It's about what are the values that we share and how we prioritize them. And that is the place that we will go.
Let's play that one more time.
It's not about a dollar amount. The dollar amount, as the president said, is zero. This bill will be paid for. It's about what are the values that we share and how we prioritize them. And that is the place that we will go.
Well, at this point, I don't think we share any values with what's going on in that deep state encampment called Washington. But right now, folks, it's time to move on to Sister Kathy's Freaky Deaky News Update. And as always, let's get started with the coronavirus heist.
Either you or me. So let's all wake up to the coronavirus heist and just say they know all their lies and mind control.
That's what it's going to take, folks. It's going to take you and me and everyone else who's awake, who's been red-pilled. We just need to stand up and respectfully and with all of our rights that have been given to us by God, say no. Now, they want you to get violent. They want to take the velvet glove off of that iron fist. But we need to practice civil disobedience in the way that Gandhi did. Look what Gandhi did in India, folks. Well, we need to do it now. Now, there's talk right now that Australia may actually go kinetic. And I think it's a beta test. So pay very close attention to what's going on in Australia. But, you know, this entire COVID narrative is falling apart. And I'm going to get into this in a little more detail. But I want to play this clip right now, which is a collection of, actually, we've played portions of this clip, but it's basically just showing how the narrative of these deep state operatives with regard to this flu is falling apart. It's about 7.5 minutes long, and it's a collection of doctors speaking and various experts basically contradicting everything you're hearing on the fake news. So just take a listen to this and recognize that the tide may be turning.
We've planned this. It's all planned. Now, why they planned this, I don't know. And I don't even think I want to know.
This system is being put in place using lies, and it's being put in place using lies for some purpose, and I believe that purpose is complete totalitarian control. And I think the purpose of that is going to be mass depopulation.
One of our problems here is the assumption that this is like every other vaccine we've ever seen, and it's not.
It's the greatest experiment that has ever been performed in the history of medicine, and it's being performed on human beings. It's just an incredible thought.
So all of this started to come together, and we started to get kind of a sick feeling in our stomachs that, wait a minute, this is science gone bad here. None of this is supposed to be happening. The CDC has never otherwise explained these stats, and they are so tightly related to the vaccine.
50% of healthcare providers are absolutely not getting this injection. We don't trust the data. The fox guarded the hen house. The companies did their own data. There were no independent observer groups.
You should disregard all announcements about case rates in your community because they're completely fraudulent.
The very inventor of the PCR test, Nobel Prize winner Kerry Mullis, said this test in itself is not a diagnosis.
And with PCR, if you do it well, you can find almost anything in anybody.
But they said we're being pressured in-house to add COVID to the diagnostic list when we think it has nothing to do with the actual cause of death.
As a physician, I received an email last week from the Department of Health coaching me on how to fill out death certificates.
It's another level now of criminality.
There's a lot of other doctors who feel the same way. Well, they're too frightened to speak up. And as soon as that happens, a notification, and you're in the front of the medical board.
Dr. Robert Malone is a vaccine expert. He is the inventor of mRNA technology. He's undergone systematic attack. His history is literally being erased online. These fact-checking groups, for example, factcheck.org, they're funded by an organization that holds over $1.8 billion of stock in a vaccine company.
Once I was censored, I feel like I've kind of gone into this other world. And now I'm surrounded by people that it's kind of normal to have their work talked about in a strange way.
Sent me there to cover the COVID treatments at that hospital. I just wasn't supposed to ask that question. The viewers are being deceived by a carefully crafted narrative.
They are trying to push a narrative that is not based on the decades of immunology.
Nobody's in the hospital. How is that possible in a medical pandemic?
That's fake news, that's why.
People have turned to Facebook to share their stories and experiences, with one group reaching almost 65,000 members. It was removed overnight for no apparent reason.
The victims of this vaccine, they're not being able to tell their story.
So the censoring has been going on for well over a year. It's well documented. It's unequivocal.
TikTok is taking down all of my sounds so that you guys can't hear my story.
The Great Barrington Declaration, authored and signed
by three of the world's leading experts in epidemiology, infectious diseases, and vaccines.
We've got to the point where scientists such as yourself need to kind of gather for secret meetings in houses to come out with declarations of dissent.
Are you of the same opinion?
I don't think I can answer that question.
Why not?
Anyone who speaks out against this line of policy is shut down. I basically have to be in line with the government line.
Do you want your physicians and scientists, their voices suppressed? We're polarized right now. We're polarized.
And threaten investigation and discipline for any physicians who express any of the negative aspects of any of these interventions, no matter what the evidence
is. This is great!
You're not the first doctor I've heard from who maybe got unusual visits from the state or, you know, basically got a lot of pushback.
You have to realize the number of doctors and scientists who are saying no to all this outnumbers those who say yes.
And if this is the mountain, if this is the hill where I get nailed on, I will get nailed on it. I don't care. You can report me to the board, you can kill me, you can do whatever, but I'm not going to let Americans die.
75 years ago, Hermann Göring testified at the Nuremberg trials, and he was asked, how did you make the German people go along with all this? And he said, it's an easy thing. The only thing a government needs to make people into slaves is fear. You can do this in a Nazi regime. You can do it in a socialist regime. You can do it in a communist regime. You can do it in a monarchy and a democracy.
We, the Germans, are asking this question, how it happened in the 1930s. And a lot of people are now getting a sense how it happened.
We're held hostage to more and more mutations that can be used to manipulate us over and over again and take away our freedom.
We've used these tactics in other countries to manipulate, divide and conquer. Now we're watching our own government, our own military use them against us. Men of our unit and our service believe that we're pointing our weapons in the wrong direction. This time now the tyranny is against us and our people, and we can't see it because it's on our home soil where it's never been before.
We need to start looking at ourselves as officers and thinking, is what I'm doing right? You don't get to just say, I'm following orders. And if that costs you your job, so be it. At least you'll be able to look at yourself in the mirror at night.
They start enforcing the communist state through the vaccine passport. Please, Australia, do not move to any goalpost. The second you do, they start to build the fascist state.
In Australia, people have had it too good for too long, and they see these communist countries and they think, there's no way that could happen here.
We are the most locked down country in the world.
There's over 50,000 people in here!
Massive protest. You know, the media said it was only 3,500 people.
What we saw today were 3,500 very selfish bullheads.
The mainstream media is never, ever, ever going to be on our side because they are owned and controlled by the very people we are fighting against.
They've identified that area as being a really strong area. Strong men, strong morals, strong customs.
You are the toughest, you have the strongest family, community connections, religious connections. You guys are unbreakable, and they know that they target and break you first, and makes it easier for them to break the rest of us.
Stand the fuck up. Don't be the reason why our future generations look back and think, where the heck were they?
This is the time. There is not going to be another time unless we shake this down.
I think the most poignant comment in there was from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. saying that fear is the key to this entire control mechanism. And we've done shows on this, folks. Fear is nothing more than false evidence about reality. And the only fear that we as believers should have is a healthy, biblically based fear of God. The Bible says, for the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And what type of fear is this? This is love on your knees, folks. This is when you know that the Creator God loves you so much that He wants to have a relationship with you that you just fall on your knees in fear. But the fear isn't this like trembling, oh, he's going to throw me on the hot ashes like a kid does with a worm. You know, no, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about this reverence. You know, it's really crazy when some of the best debate on this topic right now is coming from NBA players. Did you hear this? You know, the former CNN contributor, Mark Lamont, he had a foot operation and he ends up with a heart attack from blood clots. And then you have him being critical of Orlando Magic, Jonathan Isaac, who's been outspoken on his decision not to take this vaccine. But listen to what Isaac had to say in this interview. It was a presser, you know, for the NBA. These players have to talk to the press. And I think the man was very articulate, very factful in his comments. Listen.
Jonathan, Josh Robbins with The Athletic. What is it about the vaccine that makes you hesitant to get it?
I would start with I've had COVID in the past, and so our understanding of antibodies, of natural immunity has changed a great deal from the onset of the pandemic and is still evolving. I understand that the vaccine would help if you catch COVID and you'll be able to have less symptoms from contracting it. But with me having COVID in the past and having antibodies with my current age group and physical fitness level, it's not necessarily a fear of mine. Taking the vaccine, like I said, it would decrease my chances of having a severe reaction, but it does open me up to the, albeit rare, chance, but the possibility of having an adverse reaction to the vaccine itself. I don't believe that being unvaccinated means infected or being vaccinated means uninfected. You can still catch COVID with or without having the vaccine. I would say, honestly, the craziness of it all in terms of not being able to say that it should be everybody's fair choice without being demeaned or talked crazy to doesn't make one comfortable to do what said person is telling them to do. I would say that's a couple of the reasons that, I would say I'm hesitant at this time, but at the end of the day, I don't feel that it is, anyone's reason to come out and say, well, this is why or this is not why. It should just be their decision and, loving your neighbors, not just loving those that agree with you or look like you or move in the same way that you do. It's loving those who don't.
Surprise, surprise, surprise.
That's about it. So think about this. Mark Lamont, CNN's outspoken mouthpiece for the establishment narrative, has a foot operation, ends up with a blood clot and a heart attack, and he blames it on the operation and not the jab. Remember, this is a healthy 40-something-year-old man. And then he goes on and bashes this NBA player who's very logical in his thinking. You know, people, when the population starts realizing that when you add 1 + 1, you need to get 2, but they're telling you in the establishment narrative that it's 3, and then you have this idiot, Mark Lamont, Hill, I guess his last name is, from CNN, doesn't even have enough common sense to figure out that he probably got the blood clot from the shot and not from his operation. I mean, think about it. You got Jonathan Isaac, no vaccine. He's healthy, running around, playing basketball. And then you have Mark, on the other hand, who took the vaccine. And he has a heart attack, blood clots, and a hospital stay. And there's a lot of people dying. It's actually being picked up in the mainstream news. I'm seeing it over in Great Britain right now. There's a high incidence of pulmonary disease and all kinds of thrombosis and heart-related issues right now and deaths. You know, I see a biblical connection here with all of this. On the one hand, you have this mouthpiece for the establishment. And by the way, you know, once the establishment firmly gains control in terms of their draconian, tyrannical measures, these mouthpieces are the first people to go, but more on that later. So there he is, literally dying from his COVID jab, and he's still criticizing people who don't want to die from the COVID jab. You know, the devil strips people of their ability to have rational thoughts. Then he hardens their hearts as they continually reject and mock God. Now, these godless heathen, they'll be cursing God all the way up till judgment day when the fire of hell awaits them. But when they have their knees bent by the rod of God, they're going to understand that the judgment they receive is just. But wait, you know, Jonathan Isaac's not the only NBA player who's doing this, I'm going to call it a great social outreach. There was also NBA, what was it, Bradley Beal. He plays for the Wizards. And he was trying to be shamed. Actually, the reporters were trying to shame Bradley into, you know, repenting of being an anti-vaxxer, if you want. I hate these terms, too. Anti-vaxxer, anti-abortion. You know, it should be pro-life. You know, I don't want to die, folks. I'm an educated individual, and if these jabs offered any kind of benefit, I'd be the first to sign up for it. But listen to NBA Bradley Beal slam dunk these vaxxers, and he does that. It's a 3 minute and 25 second clip.
Are you vaccinated? Oh, I am not vaccinated. No, I'm not.
Do you care to share why?
Personal reason.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would like an explanation to, you know, people with vaccines, why are they still getting COVID? If that's something that we are supposed to highly be protected from. Like, it's funny that, oh, it reduces your chances of going to the hospital. It doesn't eliminate anybody from getting COVID, right? So everybody, is everybody in here vax? I would assume, right? So you all can still get COVID, right?
We're less likely to die or go to the hospital.
Okay, but you can still get COVID, right? So, and you can still pass it along with the vax, right?
You know, the whole vaccination debate, that's your personal choice, but it's probably not going to be the last time you're going to get asked these questions. Are you worried that this is going to be maybe a distraction for you, the team, going forward, and how do you plan on handling this? Because obviously, in this COVID world, everybody wants to talk about the vaccination question.
Yeah. One, it won't be any pressure from me or from my teammates or anybody. Two, I don't think it'll be a distraction. We're here to play basketball and do that at the highest level. And, you know, we have protocols and things in place to make sure that we're taken care of and we're tested, you know, regularly. So, no, I think we're good.
I guess, do you understand, I guess, both sides of the coin, the perspective, because of this question and of this debate? Obviously, it's not an easy situation for you because you're a role model in the spotlight. I guess, do you understand, I guess, the whole picture?
Yeah. I have family. My mom and dad are vaccinated. My older brothers are vaccinated. My sister-in-law is vaccinated. I have people that are very close to me that are vaccinated. Just as well as I have people that are close to me and related to me that are not. So it's a fine line. It's a personal choice between everybody. 100%. Like, I understand both sides of it. Like, I understand that there is a percentage of people who can get very sick. I didn't get sick. I didn't get sick at all. I lost my smell, but that was it for me. Everybody's going to react different. Everybody's going to take it differently. I mean, some people have bad reactions to the vaccine. Nobody likes to talk about that. And what happens if one of our players gets the vaccine and they can't play after that, or they have complications after that? Because there are cases like that. But I feel like we don't talk about those as heavily because they're so minute, maybe. But, I mean, they are existent. So it's like I said before, we can talk all day about it. Everybody's going to have their own opinion. Everybody's going to have their own timing and comfort of when they feel like they want to meet those criteria or needs, or feel like they want to go through with getting the vaccine.
Can I ask a question? Are you vaccinated?
So there you have it, folks. Did you hear that pushback from the reporter? It was almost like a religious fervor. But, you know, the thing that's probably the craziest to me is that when you get these topics, which are the agenda items for the establishment, and one of them right now is 100% compliance, and folks, we haven't seen the worst of it yet. Just look at what's going on in Australia. When you see the fervor that these reporters have, why aren't they investigating all of these adverse reactions? Why aren't they talking to these whistleblowers, people that are on the front line, these doctors and healthcare providers that are coming out and saying, we're not reporting the adverse events. We're not reporting the deaths. We're making every death a COVID death. We're turning a blind eye to all these adverse reactions. Why aren't they reporting this? Well, because they are puppets for the establishment. And like I've said, the CIA and the other security agencies, they're involved with the media, folks. Hey, how about this article? Did you hear this? Remote control of brain activity with heated nanoparticles. This is in the science section of The Guardian this week. Researchers are developing new methods of wireless deep brain stimulation. Two teams of scientists have developed new ways of stimulating neurons with nanoparticles. Now, why am I bringing this up? Well, this allows the scientists, you know, the bureaucrats, to control brain cells remotely using either light or magnetic fields. And this ties directly into what Dr. Carrie Madej reported on the Stu Peters show this week. I don't know if you heard that. These methods that we're working with, they're touting as being quicker and far less invasive tech methods to control the brain. Now, they're being applauded for this as, and this is always the way they do it, as potential new treatments for human disease. So on one side of the coin, yes, there can be some benefits, but that's not the reason this money's being pumped into this. Now, over the years, there have been ways to stimulate brain cell activity, but these are arguably the most powerful and advanced technologies, and it's a field known as optogenetics. And this enables the technologist to switch specific brain cells on or off with a remarkable precision, again, and simultaneously recording their behavior using pulses of light. And this is exactly what the doctor on Stu Peters reported. And we're going to get into this in more detail next week. But right now, folks, it's time for our Kabuki Theater updates.
COVID-19, George Floyd, Rice, BLM, police report of the 2020 elections. All merely coincidence? I hardly think so. Folks, it's called Kabuki Theater. In Japanese, ka means salt, bu means dance. Ki means skill from the verb, kabu meaning to slant or display. Folks, it's all a lie. It's the flattened curve. The curve of the economy, stupid, must slow down the velocity of money. Portal hyperinflation before we're done. Stealing it all, Trump, bad. Must go, good is bad, bad is good. Up is down, light is dark. It's all Kabuki Theater, folks. Prepping the masses for the end of 2030 and the new world war. Just say no to it all and wake up before it's too late.
Now, I've been saying for almost a year now that the lines between the scamdemic and other Kabuki theater out there, which primarily started with the election 2020 scandal, these lines are now being blurred. And that was always the plan. And here's more confirmation. You know, you're hearing about a $3.5 trillion spending plan, which is going to actually cost the American people $0, according to the great mathematician Nancy Pelosi. But a recent survey that was reported by Breitbart.com states that a majority say the left using coronavirus pandemic as a Trojan horse for permanent socialism. And just three quick bullet points. The majority of voters believe that this is a Trojan horse to bring in permanent socialistic programs. And this was reported by the Rasmussen survey that was released on Monday, and it found that the respondents agreed or disagreed with this statement. The radical left wants to use this terrible but temporary pandemic as a Trojan horse for permanent socialism. And that's exactly what's being voted. In fact, 59% agreed with that statement. And of those, 43% strongly agreed. Now, this is really sad. And what's even more alarming is that a majority of Republicans and independents believe that this is also the case in a ratio of 76 and 56% respectively. So bottom line, America is waking up. The communists are trying to take over, folks. And this is exactly what some of the Cubans were warning, some of the former Cubans, I should say, who are now in the United States as successful businessmen. They're warning that this is how Castro took over. Now, whether it's by radical revolution, like the Bolsheviks did, you know, when the Red Russians fought the White Russians back at the turn of the 20th century, or progressive gradualism as taught by the Fabian Society, What always follows after the communists are firmly in power is genocide. And the first people to go are some of these mouthpieces. You know, people like Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, Anderson Cooper. Did you hear Anderson Cooper this week on the late night show? And, you know, he's a sick pervert. He really is. Did you see that one shot where he's in bed with his homo husband or whatever it is, and they're both holding the baby? Well, first of all, I've never seen a dad get in bed with the mom after they had a baby and took the photo. That was all staged, thick. Listen to Anderson Cooper talk about his mom wanting to bear his child. It's tough, folks, but this was on with Stephen Colbert on the Late Night Show.
I'm sitting there, and I'm thinking, okay, don't be negative, but how do I convince my 85-year-old mom not to have a child right now? Because that's a question we've often asked ourselves, I'm sure all of you have. It's a very relatable story. So I start saying things like, well, you know, mom, that's, first of all, mom, I do. I find that fascinating and incredible that a licensed gynecologist told you that you could have a baby at 85. But, you know, I think you need to think about it. I think you need to take some time with it.
Big decision.
And it's very labor intensive, no pun intended. And, you know, and let's do some math. Let's see, you're 85. When the child goes to college, you'll be, 105. How does that math sound to you? Anyway, she says to me, honey, I'm not talking about having a child of my own. I mean, that's crazy. I'm 85. I was like, oh. Okay, great, of course. Yeah, I know, it is nuts. So what are you talking about? She's like, well, you know, you can get an egg anywhere nowadays. I was like, uh-huh. She's like, well, what I was thinking is you get an egg and, you know, fertilize it with your sperm, and I'll carry your child. Yeah. Yeah. So we tried it, and I was just stunned, and I finally said to her, I was like, you know, mom, I love you, but even for you, that is just bat crazy. That's nuts. I was like, that is so, like, weirdly Oedipal on a whole other level. That kid would be on the front page of the New York Post for the rest of his life. Like, then, fast forward 2 years later, I get a thing in the mail that my mom has sent me, because that's how we communicated, and it's a newspaper clipping, and it's a photograph. The article, the headline is, Grandmother Bears Child for Son, and it's some woman, I think, in Italy, who I think was like 65 or something, or 70, and it's a photo of her in the labor room, in the stirrups, and it's her, and she had a gay son and his husband, and it was the husband's sperm that fertilized the egg that his partner's was carrying. Anyway, the photo is she's in the delivery room with her legs in a thing, and her son and his husband are right there, ready to catch. And my mom has circled it and then written in a note, "See!" exclamation mark.
Gosh.
Yeah, that's worthy of a golly, isn't it, Gomer? Remember, folks, this twisted sicko is a CIA agent. Before he worked at CNN, he worked at CIA. Once CIA, always CIA. Can anyone say Operation Mockingbird? These fools, what they do is they lull the people, the sheeple, into sleep as the Luciferians plan their kill shot. And hear me right now, folks, and I'm going to say this as clearly as I can, and I'm confident now with all the evidence I've gathered, this entire COVID issue, this scamdemic, is part of a mass genocide plan. Folks, I have the papers from the Freedom of Information Act request. Yesterday, I was working on a furnace. We had a premature failure of one of our furnaces, so I had to drop everything I was doing because the people I have had trained to build these furnaces have departed from our employment, and I'm left building these myself. But I don't want to get into that. It gives me a lot of time to work in the shop, you know, cutting the refractory and putting the furnace bricks together to assemble this furnace. Well, anyway, story short, I put my ear pods on and I'm listening to all these different podcasts of these virologists and these doctors and these researchers that have been reporting and dropping the little breadcrumb trail right through the forest. And what I've been able to conclude now, and I've read all the source documents, this is literally a lab-engineered weapon of mass destruction. So I've looked at FOIA of Information Act requests that have tied critical research papers to the MERS Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome that was supposed to be released in 2016 after Hillary Clinton won and Russia was let loose. There's the gain-of-function research. There's the emails between Peter Druzak and Fauci, you know, the guy from the EcoHealth Alliance. Then there's the very recent Drift research where the DARPA leak was released. And then, of course, folks, and I've been talking about this for years, there's Deagle 2025, which you can't find on the Internet anymore. Did you know that, folks? It's not there. I have a clip here that I've played in the past, and it's about 3.5 minutes long. Listen to what Deagle 2025 predicted for the United States in the year 2025, a 66% population reduction.
What will happen in 2025? An international forecasting website, Deagle.com, published an interactive graph where it projects future prospects or trends for any nation in the world that you click on. Although the graph has been updated since 2013, their site currently charts changes in population, GDP, and other national factors of almost every country in the world from 2017 to 2025, allowing you to easily cross-compare the statistics. They forecast that from 2017 to 2025, the United States' population will be cut down to less than a third of its size, from 327 million to 100 million, while the UK is whittled down to almost a sixth of its 2017 size, 66 million to 15 million. France loses nearly half of their population, while Germany is inexplicably trimmed down from 81 million to 28 million. During this same stretch of time, China and Russia are projected to maintain the same population, while India and Brazil grow by a few million more people. Why are populations dramatically disappearing in such a short amount of time? And why 2025? Deagle's forecast says that the U.S.'s GDP will fall from $19 trillion to $1.6 trillion, less than a tenth of its former self from 2017. The U.K. drops from $2.9 trillion to $132 billion, while Canada, France, and Germany follow suit, dropping from the trillions to the hundreds of billions in GDP. However, China and Russia are expected to grow their GDP by $1 trillion and over $2 trillion respectively, while Brazil maintains a stable GDP at $3.2 trillion and India loses only $2 trillion of its projected $7.3 trillion. The defense budget for each Western nation follows the same trend, a sharp drop in the billions. While as predictably predicted by Deagle.com, China, Russia, India, and Brazil increase their defense budget in the double and triple digit billions, clearly showing a major shift in national military power worldwide. Countries associated with the Economic Development Group known as BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China, arrive in a future with greater population stability, a growing GDP, and a booming defense budget. Why does Deagle predict such a bleak 2025 for North America and Europe? Little is known about the owners of Deagle.com, but according to their own website, Deagle is partners with and clients of the NSA, NATO, the World Bank, the United Nations, and other national and international agencies. They say the economic and demographic data used in the making of their forecasts is widely available by institutions such as the CIA, IMF, UN, and USG. Also, they make it clear that they are, quote, not linked to any government in any way, shape, or form. Either way, what will happen in 2025? And why do multiple other publications predict 2025 to be a tumultuous year? This is Brian Wilson with InfoWars.com.
You know, Brian did an excellent job there summarizing Deagle 2025, and we've been talking about that for the last 11 years, maybe 12 years, folks. Think about what he said. The G20, G8, G7 bloc of nations, U.S. down 66%, France and Germany down. Great Britain down from 66 million to 15 million, whereas China and Russia hold status quo, and India and Brazil, the other two nations of the BRIC nations, increase in population and GDP. This is telling you is that the deep state, the globalists, the 1%, whatever you want to call them, the Luciferians, they have now said that we're shifting our economic model away from the United States, Western nations, to Russia, India, Brazil, and China. So, and here's another one. Did you hear about the TikTok video this week of the Walmart employee stalking cadaver bags? Listen to this, and then I'll comment a little bit. It's about a one-minute clip.
Look at all these body bags in here. I don't know what they're getting ready for. Bunch of them, though.
All right. All the people talking all that shit.
Here you go. Tell me what this says.
I can't do it all. I don't want to get in trouble.
Walmart gas chamber.
Let me show y'all something. It's the gas chamber that everybody keep talking about in Walmart. They just built this literally last night. This was not here yesterday. This is not here. Look at that. Look how big it is. And then look, you even have a pressure gauge. You know, like a lot. It's not, this is like on the opposite side of the food side. It's not on the side of the store with the food. So they can't say this is a freezer. Stay woke, y'all. There's another door right here with a lock on there. It has a temperature gauge.
So that video had all the visual proof in it. You needed to actually see it. There's a guy inside a Walmart warehouse with his Walmart vests on, and so did all the other people working in there. You could see it as plain as day. He was standing up on a mezzanine looking down at all of these pallets, and I'm talking a room full of pallets. Then somebody flashes, yeah, I trust you, bro, but trust and verify, that type of thing. So then what the guy did is he comes down off the mezzanine, he walks over to the pallets, and that's when you heard him talking about, hey, I can't do everything, and I don't want to get busted, you know, by his management. And he zooms in on one of the pallets, and they're all the same. You could see them. And it says cadaver bags, 36 by 92, I believe it was, the dimensions, 36 inches by 92. Folks, we're talking thousands and thousands of body bags stocked at a Walmart warehouse. Why, folks? And then he mistakenly called these huge, I'm talking gigantic walk-in freezers, as gas chambers. No, they were walk-in freezers. Well, what would you use a walk-in freezer with all these body bags for? To store dead bodies? So that audio was taken from TikTok, and it was uploaded to YouTube, and I guarantee you that'll be down. So why on earth would they be stocking body bags? Do they anticipate people dropping dead? Or are the powers that be pre-positioning these body bags because they know that this vax is going to kick in here with heart attacks, heart failure, strokes, pulmonary embolisms? These things are happening. Myocarditis. Many people are dying. I told you, folks, I'm convinced now that this is a genocide event on a global scale, which pales anything the Nazis did. These are war crimes. Now, maybe that dark winter that everybody was talking about last year, maybe that dark winter comes this year as the flu season erupts, you know, and people
start to succumb as their immune systems are totally compromised. So maybe even a common cold today, people very sick. We might literally be seeing hundreds of dead people in the streets. This is a possible scenario. Remember Biden talking about the dark winter? Listen to this from last fall.
Vice President Biden, your reaction, and just 40% of Americans say they would definitely agree to take a coronavirus vaccine if it was approved by the government. What steps would you take to give Americans confidence in a vaccine if it were approved?
Make sure it's totally transparent. Have the scientists of the world see it, know it, look at it, go through all the processes. And by the way, this is the same fellow who told you this is going to end by Easter last time. This is the same fellow who told you that, don't worry, we're going to end this by the summer. We're about to go into a dark winter, a dark winter.
Sorry, folks, I had my mute on. You heard it right there. So this imposter-in-chief tells us last fall during the campaign that it has to be totally transparent. Well, it's anything but transparent. Remember last week we talked about that nearly 25% of the ingredients in the quote-unquote FDA-approved version of the Pfizer jab, the one made by their partner in Germany, has been undisclosed? That's not transparency. Folks, this COVID-19 scandemic is not what the fake news is reporting to be. It's not about health. It looks to many people as if this disease, quote-unquote, was invented to get the vaccine, which has the bioweapon in it, the spike protein, as a way to get it into the people along with some other stuff. And if this continues, there's going to be grave consequences. You know, all good has to do for evil to prevail is nothing. There's a lot on right now, folks. What about all these food recalls? Did you hear about this latest one? Nest Company, the owner of, that's the big Swiss company. They own the DiGiorno's pizza, and that is a good frozen pizza. It is. But they had a mix-up with their three meat pie, and it contains soy protein, which can cause allergic reactions, or so they say. So they've recalled 27,872 pounds of these frozen pizzas on Saturday after discovering a mislabeling event. So this is the crispy pan crust pepperoni pizza. And it actually has three meat pies in it, along with soy that's not listed. So they pulled all this off the shelf. Do you think they destroyed it? No, this went into the deep underground military bases. The dumbs, you know. Now, do you believe that all of these food recalls we've been hearing week after week after week is these foods are just being destroyed? No, they're being redirected into these deep underground military bases. So this food is being confiscated from the general public and being moved into these bases. They're preparing for something, folks. That's what's happening. Right now, it's time for Ken's Corner, spelled with a K.
Welcome to Ken's Corner, spelled with a K, where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
Hey, it wasn't Ken's Corner. It was Coop Talk, Henrietta. How did that happen? You know what? I wrote down wrong on my list here. My fault, my bad. Anyways, it's time for Coop Talk with Henrietta. In the midst of all this craziness, we do need to... So that's exactly what Terry and I did. And we segregate our food stores into some different ways. So first of all, you have your fresh food that you're going to eat that week or maybe for the next couple of days, you know, your fresh vegetables and fruits and meats. And they stay in your refrigerator. You should have that all the time, but you know, that's going to be gone in a couple of days, a week at the most. Then the next line of defense is your deep freezer with frozen meats, vegetables, fruits. And that's for your midterm storage. That'll last you, you know, for a month to 12 months. And then you better be prepared to keep that freezer running in the event of a power outage. And I've told you folks, we have our own water supplies out here, multiple. We have our own energy supply, multiple deep well gas wells that we own, our own power generation. I'm not boasting, I'm just telling you, prepare. So that's your mid-level. And then your deeper level, which would take you 2 to 4 years, would be canned goods. So get yourself one of those gorilla shelves that can hold a good bit of weight and go to your local grocer and, you know, buy the house brand. So, you know, you can go to Aldi's, you can go to Walmart, whatever your local stores are, Kroger's, A&P, whatever, and buy the canned goods. And make sure you check the dates because they'll have the older stuff out front, first in, first out. Get the stuff in the back, and you'll see canned goods last 2 to 4 years. Get your vegetables, your fruits packed in natural juices, your canned meats like your chickens and your beef. Not as good as fresh, but you can make chicken soup out of that. You can make beef soup, stir fries. You want to get your paste. From a paste, which is a highly concentrated tomato, you can make your sauces. And don't forget instant potatoes. You can get canned instant potatoes in the bulk sections of most of these stores, you know, where they sell the institutional cans. Or join this, and they're across the country, join the Restaurant Depot. You need to have a visit to this, but you can go in there and buy the bulk food. So the canned goods last 2 to 4 years. And then you can get into your dry goods. And we've talked on some of these Hoop Talks about how to prepare your dry goods, you know, your rice, your beans, your noodles, your coffees, your teas, and how to pack those airtight in the food-grade storage containers. And then beyond that, and the most expensive, is your dehydrated. And these two last items, your dry goods and your dehydrated, they're good for 25 years. So I'm encouraging you right now, folks, to stock up. But now, folks, it's time for the Hopium Report. And you know, folks, you can always find a good hopium story.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Hopium Report, where dreamers of all sorts come for their faith snort. Prepared to get high on hopium.
So, we've heard about the election audit and all the hype, and then it gets released, and then basically near crickets, and that's all you hear. And then just yesterday, from the Dan O'Donnell show, they released that the Wisconsin special counsel Michael Gableman issues subpoenas in his 2020 election probe. And the question is, will any justice be served? Well, that's why this is under the Hopium Report, folks. So special counsel Michael Gableman has served subpoenas to the administrator of the Wisconsin Election Commission, the executive director of the commission, and 4 city clerks. It's all part of his probe into the 2020 election fraud in Wisconsin. So this election commissioner, Megan Wolf, and the commission director, Claire Woodall-Vogue, and the city clerks from Green Bay, Racine, Kenosha, and the former Racine mayor, Corey Mason, are all subpoenaed. And what he's doing is he's seeking records related to grants from that Facebook-funded, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's Center for Tech and Civil Life. They had undue influence in the administration of the elections in these 5 target cities. Now, do you really think any from this? Well, remember back during the, back in November, that elections executive, he was laughing about the election steal on election night when the 443,000 votes just dropped all for ballot, for Biden, and you just saw that spike in the curve. Remember it happened in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Georgia, I believe it was, at the same time, as if they were coordinating it. So, you know, I believe the election was stolen, but I don't think the deep going to give this up without a fight. So that's why I put these things in the Hopium Report. But now it's time for the Absurdian Report.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the world of the absurd. This is the Absurdium Report.
Life Mimics Theater but fiction is safer. The curtain rises. The show begins.
So, folks, what we have here in this Absurdian report, and I don't know if you heard about it, but the New York governor, Hochul, went to her church and basically said that she heard from God. This is absurd. Listen to this 1 minute and 30-second clip.
I prayed a lot to God during this time. And you know what? God did answer our prayers. He made the smartest men and women, the scientists, the doctors, the researchers, he made them come up with a vaccine. That is from God to us. And we must say, thank you, God. Thank you. And I wear my vaccinated necklace all the time to say, I'm vaccinated. All of you. Yes, I know you're vaccinated. You're the smart ones. But you know there's people out there who aren't listening to God and what God wants. You know this. You know who they are. I need you to be my apostles. I need you to go out and talk about it and say, we owe this to each other. We love each other. Jesus taught us to love one another. And how do you show that love? But to care about each other enough to say, please get vaccinated because I love you. I want you to live. I want our kids to be safe when they're in schools. I want you to be safe when you go to a doctor's office or to a hospital and are treated by somebody. You don't want to get the virus from them. You're already sick or you wouldn't be there. We have to solve this, my friends. I need every one of you. I need you to let them know that this is how we can fight this pandemic, come back to normal, and then start talking about the real issues that we have to. Fighting systemic racial injustice, which exists today, and if there's a denier, I will take you on any date because I've seen it. I know it exists, and we are not going to have a blind eye to this ever again, any longer under...
What? What? Are you serious? Are you serious? Can I have some more coffee?
Yeah, Paul, she's serious. She's a false prophet calling for all these brain-numbed, brain-dead people to be her apostles and get out there and preach the gospel of the vaccination. She's invoking God. Plus, you know, folks, not only is she misappropriating this whole concept of God talking to someone, and you know how he speaks to us? He speaks to us through his word. And the Bible has nothing to say about this. Now, we've done shows in the past on the New Age Lie of Ascension. And this week, while listening to one of his situation updates, I heard Mike Adams talk about how we all need to be good people to pass the test and to get into hell. And he's going on and on about how important it is to do the right and how very few people are going to be able to do it. And unless you do it, you're not going to get it. That's not the way it works, folks. We are saved by grace. We are saved by grace through faith, which is a gift. Men should boast. Folks, I know there's a lot of people out there that think that your good works get you into heaven, but they don't. You lay these treasures up to heaven. And now it's time for Ken's Corner.
Welcome to Ken's
Corner. And in Ken's Corner today, folks,
where I'll share my life experiences to help you understand what's going on in this crazy, crazy world. So let's get started.
So what I'd like to do today is share what the Lord has shown me from his word concerning this misconception that so many Christians have concerning the fact that they think they have to clean up their act after they get saved. They have to do something. And it's like, it gets into that stinking thinking that I heard Mike Adams with. And God bless him. He's a good man. He's doing a lot of good things. But that's not how you get to heaven. That's not how you, quote-unquote, pass the test. So many people think that after you're saved by grace that the Christian life is easy. And then they start trying to be good. And soon, most people realize this is tough. In fact, it's not only tough, it's impossible. So after failing time and time again, trying to do it themselves, soon people realize, I can't do this. And guess what? That's exactly right. You can't. The Christian life isn't hard. The Christian life is impossible without the grace of the God. Folks, years ago, I did a show titled The Amazing Dynamic Grace of God. And if you didn't hear it, go back and find it in the archives and listen to it. And if you can't find it, email me at kdbeer1961@gmail.com, and I'll send you a link to it. But our salvation begins, continues, and concludes with miracles. Think about it. It begins or commences with our salvation. Then it continues with our sanctification as we renew our minds, as we overcome these fears induced by the Luciferian-run systems of this world, and we renew them in God as we share in the mind of Christ, which is the wisdom and power of God. And then ultimately it concludes with our new resurrection bodies as we're freed from the very presence of sin in our lives. So how does this process of sanctification occur? Well, when Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me, he was saying, come and die. And he meant that you and me, we have to die to self. Now, this is voluntary, and this is where free will comes in. It comes in after you're saved. Now, just like Jesus willingly took up that cross, he's asking us to take up ours. Now, we confuse what free will actually is and what free will actually means and when free will actually occurs. You know, free will doesn't have any effect in your life until after you're saved by grace through faith, like I said, which is a gift from God, lest any man should boast. And then and only then do we have a choice to exercise free will, which we'll exercise basically with every choice we make rest of our Christian lives here on earth. So we either choose to sin, which is ultimately a choice to suffer, or we choose to yield to Christ and experience the power of God in our lives. So Romans chapter 6, verse 13 says, neither yield ye your members as instruments of unrighteousness unto sin, but yield yourselves unto God as those that are alive from the dead, and your members as instruments of righteousness. Now, we have a great misconception out there, folks, and I'm sharing with you my experience right now, okay? And I tried to get this into John's head years ago when he started to get all heretical on us, and he just didn't get it. And this is a very common misconception in Christendom right now, but it all focuses around what this cross that we're to bear actually is. It's not some cross like John's always lamenting about, and I just heard him recently on another meltdown last week lamenting about all these circumstances in his life, and that's the cross he has to bear, you know. And in some people's lives they blame it on an illness or a bad spouse, and they think that's their cross and they have to endure that. No, that's a lie from Satan, folks. Our cross isn't meant to be carried. Our cross is meant to be gotten on. You need to get on the cross, folks. You need to get up on that cross. You don't carry it. You die on it. And that's the choice we make. It's the choice to abandon self for Christ. So we come to the cross for pardon. And then we get on the cross for power. The Bible says in Matthew chapter 16, verse 25, for whosoever shall save his life, whoever shall lose his life for my sake, shall find it. When we were kids, didn't we have that old saying that said, finders, keepers, losers, weepers? The truth is, keepers, weepers, losers, finders. How about that for a little bit, okay? So just let me ask you a question. Are you willing to die to self? Are you willing to die to sin? Do you want to die from the power Satan has in your life? Now, I know these are tough ideas to grasp, but when you do, I promise you it will radically change your life, and you'll see what Paul meant when he said, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless. The Bible says in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20, I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless, I must live a life with children in the that he still has to do these corporations, you know. I the faith son of God loved him, gave himself for me. From we to serve God, we're going to fail here. It's like fighting to get out of quicksand. You just can't do it. So I just encourage you all, folks, to realize that it's time to stop trying and start trusting God. And that means that the very same way that we trusted God to save us is the very same way which we must trust him to sanctify us. Okay, enough blathering on my part, okay? Right now, it's time for Back to the Future. And in this segment, we take something old and bring it back to the future. Now, I want to wind the clock back about 30 years in this episode, and I want to revisit a book. In fact, we're going to probably pick on it next week again. It's titled Secret Societies and Psychological Warfare. It was written by Michael Hoffman II, and it's a book that Bill Cooper actually alerted me to years ago. It's a masterwork, okay, and it gets into these secret societies, and in it, Hoffman discusses these, I'm going to call it a subliminal language that's used by the media and Hollywood and even in fiction and science fiction. And Hoffman refers to it as a twilight language, and he argues that the serial killings, the school shootings, the mass shootings, the bombings, all these acts of terror, you know, and you know what terror is. It's the way governments control people through fear. These violent acts are all part of the sick Hegelian dialectic, you know, that allows the people to be imprisoned by the police state with little or no resistance. Now, this book, like I said, was published years ago, but it's almost prophetic. And what I'd like to do maybe next week or over the next couple weeks is show you what I mean by that. And then I'd like to get into some other books that I think you ought to read. But right now, what I'd like to do is tie it into something that was in the news this week. And I don't know if you heard about what's happening in New York, but the healthcare workers, doctors, nurses, all the support staff are walking off en masse. So what's Governor Hochul do up in New York? Well, she comes out with an emergency declaration activating the National Guard, and she tells everybody that she is leading the war against COVID. But listen to this 41 minute and 46 second clip or something like that. Here it is.
And we'll be nation leading with our mandate, which strikes at midnight tonight, when everyone is expected in a hospital in the state of New York or a healthcare facility to have been vaccinated. I will be signing an executive order to give me the emergency powers necessary to address the shortages where they occur. That's going to allow me to deploy the National Guard, who are medically trained, deploy people who've been retired, who may have had a license lapse, bring in people from elsewhere. That is not my first position, though, my friends. My desire is to have the people who've been out there continue to work in their jobs, work in them safely, and to all the other healthcare workers who are vaccinated, they also deserve to know that the people they're working with will not get them.
I apologize, folks. I had my mute on again, and my bad. But did you hear her? She's nation leading. So here we go, folks. We are at war. Now, right now, it's a non-conventional, okay, pre-kinetic type of event. But this is psychological warfare, and it's the pretext to a kinetic war. It's the wearing down, you know? And it's going to end in a kinetic event. You know, they're talking right now that Australia may be literally one gun away from a kinetic civil war. But what's important is to understand that your attitude throughout these circumstances, these high and lows, will define your ability to be an overcomer. And that's very important. So as you see these things unfold, I thought we could take a lesson from a guy named Joe. Now, we know him as Joseph in the Bible, but I suppose his friends may have called him Joe. And the Bible tells us that God raised up a family through Abram, who had a son named Isaac, who had a son named Jacob, who sired 12 sons. And we know a lot about some of them and very little about others. You know, we know that Judah, one of the sons of Jacob, led to the lineage of David that led to our Messiah. We know about Levi, who led to Moses and the priests, you know, Moses and Aaron. And then we know about Joseph. And how do we know about Joseph? Well, chapter 37 through 50 of the book of Genesis is almost entirely about the man named Joseph. You know, Joseph is one of the few in Scripture who doesn't have any of his sin recorded by God in his word. Now, it doesn't mean he was without sin, because he wasn't. It just means that God wanted his life to be used as an example of how you and me should be living ours. And now they've actually said that he's a foreshadow of Jesus Christ. And some of the researchers of the Word of God have actually paralleled over 100 ways that Joseph gave us these indications of Jesus to come. Now, we see in the life of Joseph that it was full of high and lows. If you know anything about math and science and technology, there's this wave. It looks like a wave, literally. It's up and down, a sine wave. And that's the same way the tsunami would transmit across the ocean. But let's talk about sine waves for a minute. So if you take a horizontal line and make that 0, put another line above it and make that 10, and put another line below that first horizontal line and make that negative 10, and then just kind of draw this wave from 0 to plus 10 to 0 to minus 10 to 0 to plus 10, that's a sine wave. So this guy named Joseph, he had a lot of highs and lows in his life that you could record literally on that sine wave. You remember, he was the favorite son of this man named Jacob. So there you go. He's on a high. And his dad gives him this fancy, colorful coat. You know, the Technicolor dream coat of Jesus Christ Superstar. And his dad did that to show his love. So he's on this high, high. And then his brothers, they start to get jealous. And maybe he feels it. And he's kind of like dropping down to 0 on that chart. And his brothers get jealous. And then he has this dream, and he shares it with his brothers and his family, that he was going to rule over them. Now, remember, he's going to school, and they had to work in the fields. And one night they conspire to sell him into slavery and make it look like a murder. So they take him when he's out and throw him in a dry well. Now, that's a low, low, isn't it? And then they pull him out of the well and they sell him to some slave traders who sell him to this guy named Potiphar. And he's doing a really good job managing the household of Potiphar. And before you know it, he has the entire house under his control. When Potiphar's wife tries to make some moves on him, and he rejects that because he's an honorable man with character, and she accuses him of rape. Now, what's Potiphar to do? Well, Potiphar arrests him and throws him in jail. So Joe ends up in jail for many years, and I'd say that's another low, low. But throughout it all, his character and his circumstance, his character and his attitude never change. Now, when he's in jail, he starts having dreams and interpretation of dreams, and he actually interprets two people's dreams. And one of them was the cupbearer of Pharaoh. And you know, he tells this man what his dream means, and the man's released, and he goes back to Pharaoh, and he promises Joe that he's going to remember him, but he doesn't, okay? So Joe's in jail for many years when all of a sudden the Pharaoh has a dream, and he needs somebody to interpret it, and his cupbearer remembers Joseph. So they come to the prison and they get Joseph. Now remember, while he's in prison, he's been so trusted by the jailer that he becomes the manager of the jail. Another high in the midst of all these bad circumstances. And why? Because his character reflects the character of God, which as children of God we all can do, and he keeps his attitude high. You know, when you allow your attitude to be high regardless of your circumstances, what happens is you reach altitudes that you could never have dreamt of. So regardless of what your circumstances may be right now, folks, remember that you don't do it, but God does. You know, Joseph basically knew that too. Even when he was summoned to interpret Pharaoh's dream, he said in Genesis 41, verse 16, I can't do it, but God will give Pharaoh the answer if he desires. So he's humble, folks. Joseph interprets the dream, which basically meant that 7 years of great abundance would be upon Egypt, and then 7 years of famine would follow. And Joseph gave this guidance to the Pharaoh, and they devised a plan where they would hold back one-fifth of the grain each of those 7 abundant years, and then they'd have extra grain to weather the famine. And then Joseph's been so blessed with regard to all the good that comes around him because of his attitude and his character, that the Pharaoh makes him vice Pharaoh of the entire Egyptian empire. He's number 2 in command. And there's actually evidence in the records that this happened. And then Joseph actually meets his brothers who come in search of food, the very brothers who, you know, betrayed him. And yet, he blesses them. So let me ask you a question, folks. Where are you right now on this sine wave? Are you up? Are you down? Are you zero? I'll guarantee you, you're somewhere on that right now. What I don't know is where your attitude is. Is your attitude in the right place? You know, regardless of the situation Joseph was in, his character and his attitude were the only two things that he was able to control, and boy, did he control it. Regardless of his circumstances, after being thrown in that dry pit by his brothers, after being sold into slavery, after being accused of rape by Potiphar's wife, after being thrown in jail and being forgotten there by Pharaoh's cupbearer. So maybe we don't get accused of rape or thrown in a dry pit, sold into slavery, but we could be thrown in prison if we don't take this back. What I'm saying is we have our bad days and we have our good days. And through all, we have to keep our attitude right. We have to make certain that we've had our minds renewed by Christ so that we share in the wisdom and power of God. And that's going to define our character. And why do we want to do this? And how do we know it's true? Well, the way we do it is by crucifying ourselves, like I talked about in Ken's Corner. And then what we have to do is remember who we are. You know, we are a child of God. And there's a song, No Longer Slaves. And I just want to read a couple of the lines to you. It says, you unravel me with a melody. You surround me with a song of deliverance from my enemies till all my fears are gone. I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. I'm no longer a slave to fear. I am a child of God. From my mother's womb, you have chosen me. Love has called my name. I've been born again into your family. My blood flows through, your blood flows through my veins. Folks, don't ever forget who you are in Jesus Christ. Remember, you're surrounded by the arms of the Father, okay? By songs of deliverance. We've been liberated from our bondage. We're sons and daughters. And let us sing our freedom. Amen? You know, our God is so awesome. There's another line in here that says, you split the sea so I can walk right through it. My fears are drowned in perfect love. You rescued me so I could stand and say, I'm a child of God. Folks, I know you're going through a lot of rough times. Okay? Just like Joseph, we all do. But we're no longer slaves to fear. The Bible says in Genesis 39, verses 20-21, that Joseph's master took him and put him into prison. That was when Potiphar did that, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in prison. Now listen to what verse 21 tells us, and this is the key. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the king of the prison. So what's the takeaway for you and me, folks? God's always there, praise the Lord, and so is his steadfast love or mercy. And God will show you favor. You can't, this is always there, whether you're in the deepest part of the ocean or the highest mountain. And his love is boundless. His love isn't because you're lovable. His love is because he loves you. And by doing so, he makes you lovable. And when God says you are a son of mine through the spirit of adoption, his favor abounds regardless of your circumstances. So remember, God's presence, God's love, and God's favor is always in our lives, folks, and we can't deny this. And then listen to how he wraps it all up. Joseph wrapped this up at the end of his life in Genesis chapter 50, verse 20. After his brothers were blessed by his wisdom and his good character, which was all a reflection of God's favor, he says, but as for you, ye thought evil against me. God meant it unto good, to bring to pass, as is this day, to save much people alive. So folks, can you fathom this? This is what Paul was saying in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, when he says, all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So yes, regardless of your circumstances, you lost your job, you're getting hassled by your employer about this vaccine, stay the course, folks, and remember that all things work together for good for those who are called, for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. So we may not be able to control these circumstances, but we certainly can control our attitudes. And when our attitudes are high, I'm telling you, folks, we will soar. And in the words of Winston Churchill, never, folks, never give in, never give in.
Never give in, never give in, never, never, never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in, except to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy.
And what I thought we ought to do today is just listen to these words from Jonathan David and Melissa Helsler, No Longer Slaves. Folks, I love y'all, and provided the Lord's willing, I'll be back next week. You unravel.